It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 11th day of February 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tube. That, of course, is also where you go if you'd like to help keep The Horn on the air. There's a tab there called Contribute. And if you use that, you can help us meet the fundraising goal that we have for this evening, which, and I neglected to mention because it arrived late last night, thanks to Joey and Giraffrey. For jumping in, the fundraising goal stands at $480. That means we still got $80 to go from last week, and then we've got last night, and then we got tonight. So we're at $480. Thank you very kindly indeed. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, also over at HeadOn.live. You can jump in and be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the hours in which this program is live. You know, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and all times in the middle and on the edges and whenever it is that you choose to listen. But, you know, we're in the chat room when the program's live. If you should happen to wander by right now, Anatole and Jimmy and Squeaky are all standing by to greet you and welcome you to the festivities. And, of course, you'll be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. Yeah. So everything's there. I had a note from Suman asking me about the podcast yesterday. It's my understanding there wasn't any problem, but Suman was having a hard time getting the podcast. I don't know why, Well, for some reason or another, to the best of my knowledge, and based on what I heard from other members of the community, everything's up and running. But if you have a hard time getting it, if you have any difficulty with the podcast, by all means, don't hesitate to drop me a line. BobKincaid@gmail.com. Okay? Much obliged. Wow, that's interesting. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out that the website's been taking an absolute onslaught of sleazy little hits in the last few days. Huh, imagine that. How about that? What a surprise. These coming from, of all places, from Greece. And we know, among other things, we know that we have our fair share of weird, sick, perverted, disgusting little maggot lurkers. So, you know, fuck it, fuck all y'all. You're not allowed on the program, and you don't even get to comment. So, because it's a long-standing tradition here, it's a rule even that we don't allow wingnuts here, maggots, birthers, deathers, tenthers, ninthers, birchers, booger eaters, chimpanzees, libertarians. all those shitbirds have thousands and thousands of outlets wherein they can wade around in their own feces and have the time of their lives. So we're not going to sacrifice any of the valuable time here for them. They can just fuck off and keep fucking off. So I don't know. That's odd. Steve in New York telling me only Dr. Bill's podcast is at Podbean. That makes no sense. I put it up, but I'll double check. So it is. It's Titanic Tuesday here on the Horn. Remember, we reserve Titanic Tuesday for manifestations of Titanic white wing, right wing maggot intellect, and today is no different. We've got a boatload, and it. It's revolting. But then again, you know, they always are. And there's more filth and more sleaze, because as long as Flaccid Flavius remains in the White House, we will have issues of filth and sleaze, because his entire being consists of filth and sleaze, because the best part of him ran down his mother's leg. What today, you may ask? Well, today, last night we discussed the fact that well, that's just weird. Okay, Steve in New York, tell me. I checked Apple Podcasts. Same thing. Always go through headon.live for all your podcasting needs. That seems to be the best bet. But both podcasts made it up yesterday, which is really weird. Last night on the program, toward the end of the program, we discussed the fact that the Department of Justice had come out with its sentencing memo for Roger Stone. You remember Roger Stone, the sleazy rat-fucking bastard who has a Richard Nixon tattoo on his back. The guy who got caught out trying to find guys to fuck his wife while he watched. I mean, you know. Whatever floats your boat, as long as everybody's consenting. But you know, don't maybe be a part of the party that calls itself the Party of Family Values and be out there running around somebody to, looking for somebody to turn you into a little cucky. But that's Roger. So what the fuck? Why not? Anyway, the Department of Justice had the lawyers, the prosecution in the Roger Stone case, had settled on a recommendation for a sentence of 7 to 9 years for old Raj, based on his 7 felony convictions. But before the night was out, Pussy Probus had tweeted his displeasure, saying that it was unfair to poor Roger, who only had tried to help my campaign, and other illegal things were done. And now we find out today that, granted, they claim that it had nothing, I tell you, nothing to do with the tweet. But suddenly, Bill Barr, the prosecution, involved himself to declare that, no, that was much too harsh a sentence for poor, put-upon, innocent lamb, Roger Stone. See, this is what happens when an obviously miscreant, impeached president gets away with it. He figures he can get away with everything. Over at CNN, Caitlin Collins reported earlier today that Trump was denying that he got involved and asked him to change that sentencing recommendation. Although the tweet was,
This is a horrible and very unfair situation. The real crimes were on the other side, as nothing happens to them. Can I allow this miscarriage of justice?
Meaning that he will probably, you know, pardon Roger Stone, because Roger Stone so far has held fast with the ancient rule of omerta and hasn't turned turtle on Marcus Aurelius there. What's particularly interesting is that this dictator, emphasis on the word dick. What's that? We'll save that for another day. Is claiming that he has a dictator's power, that he can just do as he pleases and tell the Justice Department how to go about their business, even though he's not a lawyer, even though he doesn't hold any degrees that are even remotely related to law, even though he probably thinks habeas corpus has something to do with dead people. God almighty.
I thought it was ridiculous I didn't speak to the judge. I'd be able to do it if I wanted. I have the absolute right to do it. I stay out of things to a degree that people wouldn't believe, but I didn't speak to him.
Yeah,
I thought
don't.
The recommendation was ridiculous. I thought the whole prosecution was ridiculous. And I look at others that haven't been prosecuted, or I don't know where it is now. But when you see that, I thought it was an insult to our country, and it shouldn't happen. And we'll see what goes on there. But that was a horrible aberration. These are the, I guess.
Aberration? Any longtime practitioners of the art of word knowing want to help with that one? Aberration? Because I got nothing. Aberration. Apparition? Aberration? Is this like Nambia over in Africa? Neither Namibia nor Zambia, but Nambia? Is this just another one of those weird little made-up moments from the disordered, flailing, spirochete-infested remaining cells sloshing around in a thin gray soup between his ears? Is that what this is? Probably. Probably. Go figure.
It's an aberration. I've got the See,
he thinks he has a lot of absolute rights. In fact, he's said in the past, as we were repeatedly reminded during the fraudulent event that wasn't a trial, that he thinks Article 2 lets him do as president
anything I want.
Jesus.
The same Mueller people that put everybody through hell, and I think it's a disgrace. No, I have not been involved with it at all.
In other words, he's been involved, his fingerprints are all over it, and he's guilty as sin. On the other hand, he does want the military to look at disciplinary action against Lieutenant Colonel Vindman. You know, for honoring his oath to the Constitution. Gee, I wonder if Susan Collins will go and tell him, naughty, naughty, don't do that. Ah, okay, thank you, Steve in New York. Aberration. It's a slang word from Bonomoese. Nimrata Haley would know. Call her up. It's easy to get hold of her. Just tell her you're the president of Poland. She's a fucking idiot. She'll take the call.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Thanks to Gary and Gaia for getting us started this evening. That takes us down to 4:30. That's tremendous. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. I cannot thank you enough. So that means we've got, we got $30 to finish last week's fundraising. And then we'll get started on this week's. Thank you, Gary and Gaia. What's that, Darlene in Connecticut? Sounds like a cross between aberration and abolition. Aberration, no surprise he'd have an issue with the latter, abolition.
No. Abolition. I love the people of Abilene.
Because he's not real, but he's not particularly good at the whole geography thing either. That's something we learned out of the Klan rally he held in Manchester, New Hampshire, last night. sure. Speaking, and by the way, it turns out that the whole let's have a rally in Manchester was another piece of dirty business and an improper use of government resources. The whole reason for having the Manchester rally was not that he was desperate to bask in what Pink Floyd once referred to as the warm space cadet glow. I mean, that was a side benefit. But the reason they scheduled last night's Manchester rally was that on the night before a hotly contested New Hampshire primary, they wanted to make sure that the presidential security that fucks up everything everywhere a president goes would impede traffic in New Hampshire so that people would have a hard time getting to rallies. No shit. No kidding. So if we actually had a functioning Senate, he could probably be called to account for that because it's a gross violation of federal law. But we don't. We have instead that tyranny of an 18% minority lording it over the other 82% of the rest of the country, as orchestrated and connived and conspired by Addison McConnell of Sheffield, Alabama. The worst thing that ever came out of Sheffield, and there's been some pretty bad shit come out of Sheffield. The Hill reporting, email from Flavio, fuck it, I'm out of here, department. Prosecutor withdraws. A Department of Justice prosecutor who asked a judge to sentence Roger Stone to between 7 to 9 years in prison has withdrawn from the former Trump aides case after reports that officials would seek to reduce the sentencing recommendation. The withdrawal by prosecutor Aaron Zielinski on Tuesday came after the initial sentencing guidance was sharply criticized by President Trump, raising questions about potential political interference in the sentencing of Stone. Stone was found guilty of lying to Congress and witness tampering. It's unclear if Zielinski's move was done on his own volition. Zielinski did not reply to a request for comment. Roger Stone was only convicted of lying to Congress. Why the hell should he be the only one to get punished? Okay, I mean, there's five other members of the Trump gang, the Trump thugs who did that or things like it. But, I mean, all kinds of maggots went up and lied to Congress, and they're not going to jail for 7 to 10 years. But see, that's what you do. If you're a commissioned military officer, or if you're a lifetime career civil servant in the Justice Department, and you see shit being done to subvert the law itself, you walk, lest you wind up being tarred with the same corrupt brush, because this will not last forever. And please, sweet little fake baby Jesus, maybe we'll get a government in there that will be willing to clean up this mess and make sure that no one ever, 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 ever decides to run roughshod over the law again. Again, if we can get him out of there, and if we can get someone in who is interested in punishing crimes. Looks like we're going to be working on the word aberration for a while. He was probably told to say aberration, says Lee in New York. He can't call it a miscarriage of justice because he has to be pro-life. Maybe Roger Stone should get a life. Maybe Roger Stone should get life. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa says, aberration, adjective, a portmanteau of abhorrent and abortion, or two, simply the Trump presidency. There we go. And I'm not the only one who to point out that the resignation of the Stone prosecutor, Mr. Zelensky, goddess of irony, doesn't mess around. Zelensky, really? Slightly different spelling, but probably the poor bastard who has to go in and say, sir, Zelensky's resigned. Fuck! Again? What? I thought we were done with him. It was a perfect phone call. No, sir, not that Zelensky. There's more of them! Any doubt we're now a dictatorship, asks Steve in New York, at least until January 20th, 2021? And thereafter, even if we win, if at some point in time this little fucker is not hauled away in handcuffs and prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. Oh, no, Jeff on the left, it's time out, Bob. Flaccid Fabius? No. Give yourself a cowbell. I can't take responsibility for that one. I think that was Flavio's. And it's Flaccid Flavius. F-L-A-V-I-U-S. The Romans didn't know the Colosseum as the Colosseum. The Colosseum got its nickname, Colosseum, from the Colossus, which was a giant statue of Nero that sat next, that stood next to the Flavian Amphitheater. Just, you know. Now you know. But yes, Nero put up a giant statue of himself. Gold, even. And don't think for a minute that nitwit Nero wouldn't love to do the same thing. In fact, he's kind of got a plan in place. You may not have seen this because there's so much to miss out there. But in fact, he has declared himself, and knowers of mid-20th century history will recognize this. Nitwit Nero wants to be completely, totally, like, absolutely in charge of all architectural decisions in the federal government. And there's going to be some sort of a mandate, actually by way of an executive order, that declares that he's the final word on all architectural decisions, and that things have to be done in classical or neoclassical architectural styles. No more utilitarianism, no more brutal realism. He'll probably want to remodel the Museum of the American Indian and the Museum of the African American Museum, and maybe the Holocaust Museum. Yeah, let's put a dome and some porticos and some columns, big beautiful columns, and like gold leaf and stuff. I mean, haven't you seen like the inside of my apartment? Totally tasteful.
That's real.
But no, I'm not the only one pointing out that when you become witness to a gross miscarriage of justice, you quit. And former federal prosecutors being queried and offering their opinions on social media. Joyce Aline, former U.S. attorney for the Northern District of Alabama, said a third prosecutor has stepped down from the Stone case. DOJ's filed a 5-page memo contradicting its earlier memo. Adam C. Jed. I'm sorry, Aaron C. Well, that's weird. They're usually pretty particular about their pleadings. Notice of withdrawal pursuant to local rule of criminal procedure 44.5E. Please notice the withdrawal of Aaron C. Jed as counsel for the government in the above-captioned matter, United States of America versus Roger Stone, Jr. Respectfully submitted, Adam C. Jed. That was done in a hurry. And in the interim, they've lowered the sentencing recommendation to 3 to 4 years from 7 to 9. Now, is there a saving grace in all of this? Watching these shenanigans unfold, the United States District Judge has the power under, you know, being an Article III judge, clothed with the majesty, the flowing robes, bald, impressive, has the power to say, I'm rejecting everybody's arguments and I'm imposing sentence. Fuck all of y'all. And one can only hope that something along those lines will happen. It's going to be hard for Amy Berman Jackson to forget the threats that were leveled against her. So hopefully she won't go along with the 3 to 4 years or the time served argument probably being put forward by his pettifogging defense team. Hopefully Judge Jackson will take one look and say, I'm going to max him out. If Nitwit Nero is just going to pardon him, I'm going to let him pardon him for a bunch. Right? And somewhere, noted Republican moderate Susan Collins is muttering something about having tried to get him not to do that. Stephen, New York wonders, what's next? Washington's new name is Germania? Well, I mean, if it quacks like a duck, or actually if it steps like a goose, and what all goes with. Flavio says, people with integrity walk. My dad had been hired at a company as a consultant, but having been overruled by a relative of the boss, nepotism, my dad figured why stay if they're not taking his recommendations as a consultant. He was out of a job for 6 months, had to borrow money from the in-laws, but he stood on principle. I'll never forget that story. Well, those serve as shining moments of decency and integrity. James in Illinois asks, what the fuck? Are we going to plunder the artwork from peoples around the world and bring it home to the Drumpfian Amphitheater? Don't give him any ideas, James. They'll probably, Randy in PA says, they'll probably try to get it down to 1 year or less, the sentence for Roger Stone, so he can serve it at Club Fed. No, what they're going for is time served, Randy. Because he spent some gray bar time as it is. Hasn't he? Or has he been free all this time? The other thing that the federal judge has available to her is upon imposing sentence, she can make Nitwit Nero sweat. Because she can say, I commit you, Roger Stone, I commit you to the custody of the Department of Corrections, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and end it with forthwith, bang the gavel, and Roger goes bye-bye right then, right there. No time to go get his toothbrush. You better have brought it with you, motherfucker. And he goes straight into incarceration. And there's no delaying so he can have his pettifoggers run to the appeals court. That power does exist. And then Nitwit Nero will have to decide whether he's going to... And you know, there's no real decision process there when you come right down to it. But like I said, he was coming unglued last night. On a number of levels. He had some geography problems. He, among other things, who wouldn't get confused? Think about it. New Hampshire, Massachusetts. But he did get around to complaining, just as I predicted last night that he would.
There were so many of those Massachusetts, and they all came up here in buses, and they voted illegally, and that's why it looks like we lost in New Hampshire. A bunch of illegal voting Massachusettsians, and I know it because many people are talking about it.
Jesus. Nothing special. I mean, it's not magic being able to predict this goober. It's just a matter of having a deep and abiding understanding of how his disordered mind works. Although sometimes it's a little bit icky being able to do that with such ease and aplomb. But there he was in his little Klan rally. Done for an illicit purpose, of course. Giving vent to whatever it is that the Spirokeets were outraged about. God Almighty. And this is all before we get to my filthy morning habit. So last night, as he blithered and blathered along, he manifested his unawareness that there are a couple of different places in New England called Concord. There's a Concord, New Hampshire, and then there's Concord, Massachusetts. Concord, Massachusetts being, of course, the home of the Concord grape. And the Battle of Lexington and Concord Of course, this is a guy who didn't know that Kansas City was in Missouri. Jesus. The capital of New Hampshire is Concord. And then there's Concord, Massachusetts. Right. And so there he was, blithering along in his idiot way. And he said,
we're going to rebuild the United States military. We're funding for New Hampshire, the New Hampshire Army, National Guard, readiness centers, just a few miles from here in Pembroke and in Concord. Concord. I love Concord. You know how the famous Concord is. Concord. That's the same Concord that we read about all the time, right? Concord.
But of course, nobody reads all the time about Concord. Hey, yeah, sure. Brother Deacon Asa. Okay, cowbell. Don't forget, Bob, Concord, Massachusetts is also the home of the supersonic plane. Yeah. No, the Concord that's in all the history books is Concord, Massachusetts, but don't try to tell the maggots that, because, well, they're out there galumphing along and mouth walking and knuckle breathing and picking their teeth with their toenail clippings because they're maggots. Jesus Christ! Just please let us get to January 20th, 2021, and drag him away and handcuffs. But, okay, so this is going to be weird. I forget, which Lady Gaga song is it? Where she says, "Waru radabana la sakawada." Is that Bad Romance or Alejandro? I don't know. Well, apparently Nitwit Nero was channeling his inner Gaga last night. Jesus. Oh, please, not the bondage gear. Please, not the bondage gear.
On Tuesday, I delivered my address on the State of the Union.
Clap, you monkeys. Clap! You have no idea what he's talking about, but you're there to cheer, aren't you? Because you love... you love Julius Geezer, don't you? Sure you do. Just like you love sour mash corn liquor.
And I had somebody behind me who was mumbling terribly, mumbling. He was mumbling.
Told you, channeling his inner Gaga. Wa ro ra ra ha. I just think this fucker's got his finger on the nuclear button. We could all be barbecue 15 minutes from now if he decides that somehow he thinks he can make a buck off of it. Yeah, I know. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, fuck me a running. All the federal buildings are going to start looking like the Trump Taj Mahal now. Don't be surprised. Now, of course, Nancy Pelosi never said a word. The camera was on her the whole time. Her lips don't even move. The only time she did anything was when she pointed up at Fred Gutterman, Gutenberg, you know, whose baby girl got blown away at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School because, you know, people like those filthy Republican maggots in that room they care more about guns than they do about children. Yeah. And Fred Gutenberg had the temerity to yell, "What about my daughter?" And Nancy Pelosi flashed out that index finger and pointed and mouthed the word no. Yeah. But she wasn't, you can go back and you can watch the video, her lips aren't moving. But apparently he's so far gone mentally that the noises that he hears inside his own head, he attributes to others. Or he just makes up lies because he's a fucking sociopath with a deep and abiding, probably congenital intellectual dysfunction. No, Flavio. Flavio says one more prosecutor quits. That makes two. No, we're up to three now. There's three that have walked in this latest purge. Here a purge, there a purge, everywhere a purge. Old Dick Donald had a scam. E-I-E-I-O. Okay, so it is. It's bad romance. Thank you, Flavio, that he was channeling. And, of course, he was proven to be the liar that he is in a matter of minutes after uttering this mendacious bullshit.
Very distracting.
Now, wait. What matters is what comes next. He claims he was distracted. And he's distracted 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because his brain doesn't work well. Thank you. We're keeping a running tally now. We're up to four federal prosecutors having bailed out on the Roger Stone case. Michael Mirando having left now. God, they're gonna have to swear Lindsey Graham if they can get him out from under the fainting couch down at the ancestral home of the old ancestral home of Smoldering Chode. Get a Darvon and a margarita in him, and you know, starch him up some courage. Draft him into the DOJ, and then him and Bill Barr can go and suggest that the government probably owes Roger Stone money. Jesus, these filthy, corrupt swine. Oh, what is it? Old Dick Donald had a compliant attorney general. That's about the size of it, Darlene. Well played. Well played indeed. But once he declared that... Just to put a bow on it all, that all the prosecutors on the Roger Stone case have now quit because they're not going to be they refuse to be part of this venal criminal enterprise. God damn! Please. Judge Jackson, ring him up like a cheap cash register. Thing is, those lawyers will now probably find themselves under investigation by their own boss. But anyway, out of this clip with Mara Hibaro. Channeling his inner Gaga. And I guess he was born that way, too. What's interesting is when he complains about mumbling and having been distracted, the gang of racists and morons and neo-Nazis and sympathizers there gathered in Manchester, New Hampshire, who walk among us. They knew what they were supposed to say.
That was very distracting. I'm speaking.
And he stands there. You heard the length of time in which he didn't speak. He gave the audience a thumbs up signal for lock her up and basked in the warm space cadet glow. Randy in PA says, Reagan's brain was applesauce and the U.S. ship of state sailed on regardless. True enough, Randy. But there were certain norms in place to make sure that that happened. All those norms are gone now. Norm has left the building. Here's the funny thing. What if it was Pence who was back there mumbling? We've got video evidence that Nancy Pelosi wasn't saying anything unless she's like some really freaking awesome ventriloquist. Who knows? Oh, you know what? I made a terrible mistake earlier this evening at the beginning of the program, because every program here begins with gratitude. And I screwed up, so I have thanks to send out. Thanks to our subscribers. Thank you very kindly to our 11th day of the month subscribers. That would be thanks going out to Mary Bell and Paul from Parts Unknown and John and Tony and Chico. Thank you all most kindly for being partial sponsors of this little ongoing years-long attempt at listener-supported, listener-driven, non-capitalist radio. Thank you very much indeed. And so as we near the end of the first hour of the program, we've got $30 to go to finish last week, $200 for yesterday and $200 for today. That's $230. And more bills than I care to think about awaiting payment. It's an absolute joy dealing with Frontier. I say that sarcastically. For some reason or another, one of these lines has been intermittently crashing on about a daily basis. It's really annoying. So I called it in to the tech center, which I take is located somewhere in South Asia, and explained the situation, gave them the relevant information, data, and he issued a trouble ticket. And I got a call today from the technician on the ground here, good union man, who said, I can't touch your stuff because he only put input one number into the trouble ticket, and it's fine, and they won't even give me the data on the other two. So there's going to go, and there goes another 30 minutes or so of my life as I get back on the phone to South Asia and try to get this thing sorted out. As for Nancy Pelosi being a ventriloquist, Brother Deacon Asa, who is apparently, yep, Brother Deacon Asa is taking a run at dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, and possibly Central as well. I guess it's entirely possible that Nancy had her hand up Trump's ass and was throwing the words that were coming out of Trump's cat's ass mouth. Yeah, if that won't put you off the evening soup course, I don't know what will. Ah, Jesus. So, anything on your mind? Are you all a titter? To know the New Hampshire results, I caught an extended. It was kind of interesting. I was engaging in my filthy morning habit today. And I heard all those multimillionaires sitting around the table asking the question, Democratic voters want to know why Joe Biden won't fight back harder against all these attacks on him and his family. And then lo and behold, there's Joe Biden. And not one of those multimillionaires asked him that question. He was sitting right there. They could have, but they didn't. I guess that's what happens when you let multimillionaires do the question asking. But they had Joe on, and he hemmed and hawed for a while. And he said something halfway decent. Probably in a desire to engage in more of that dirty business of, come on, let's you and him fight, which the multimillionaire for-profit media so specializes in. They asked Joe if he thought Bernie Sanders could beat Donald Trump, because earlier they'd put up a graphic showing that Biden and Sanders have about the same lead over Trump on national polling data. They're about identical, and nitwit Nero's down about 7-8 points. Of course, national polls are utterly worthless, because they don't take into account that constitutional anachronism from our filthy days as a slavery nation. You know, the Electoral College. But Joe Biden responded and said, hey, I think if we nominate Mickey Mouse, we've got a shot at beating Donald Trump. And if you choose to see that as him comparing Mickey Mouse to Bernie Sanders, well, that's kind of on you. What I took that as meaning is that Trump is so awful that if we get behind a candidate, we can win with it, just about anybody who's running, who isn't, like, you know, Tulsi. Or, well, never mind, leave it alone. But by the time it had circulated in the multimillionaire for-profit media echo chamber for a while, you know, kind of stewed, it had become a confession by Joe Biden that what made him special in the race really wasn't special, that he was supposed to. And no. I mean, he pushed back this morning. This is not a defense of Joe Biden, because, again, I haven't chosen a candidate. And what he said is, you know, it's not just about winning the presidency. It's about holding the House and taking the Senate, which is absolutely true. Now, do I share Joe's cockeyed optimism that somehow if the Democrats take the Senate, Mitch McConnell's suddenly going to get all reasonable? Not even a little bit. But just the same, the point is well taken. So they had Joe on, they had Joe off, you know, okay. And then along came Mayor Pete. And maybe it just felt like it lasted a lot longer. But he wandered along for a while and did what he does. And it just, I'm sorry, he leaves me unmoved. I will, and I when I say this, I mean it wholeheartedly. There's not going to be any nose holding in November for me. Or Agnes. Well, I can't speak for Agnes. I'll speak for me. There's not going to be any nose holding. I'm going to vote joyfully and excitedly for whomever is the nominee. Whether it's somebody who's going to turn 80 in office in complete in complete no, I'm trying to find the right word. In a situation that completely defies anything that the framers thought would the presidency would be about, let's put it that way. Or if it's some 37-year-old guy who somehow managed to convince 8,500 people to let him be the fourth the mayor of the fourth largest city in Indiana. Or if it's a senator from Minnesota who, you know, probably has an innocent man sitting in prison from her days as a prosecutor. I will vote joyfully for whomever is my party's nominee because, as I've said before, it will be the single most patriotic act I have ever performed in my life, trying to use my one vote to free this country from the sickening tyranny, the dictatorial urges of a monster the likes of which this country has never seen. A guy who makes Aaron Burr, our great early national Lucifer, the fallen angel, look like a choir boy. See, there's Steve in New York getting on the team. I'll wear yellow tights and a boa on the way to voting, no matter who it is. I'll have a smile on my face and a song in my heart. I'll walk away from that polling place saying, "Damn, I feel good for what I did today." And you know what? If we actually want to win this, it would be good if other people could get in line with that, too. I don't care who you've decided to worship in this primary process. It would be good if you would get on board with that idea, too, because it is true. If you support the Democratic nominee for president, you will be doing the most patriotic thing you have ever done in your life, unless, of course, you've ever, you know, I worn the uniform and heard shots fired in anger. And maybe this will even compare and exceed that. The threat to the nation is grave. We are in. Jesus, what was it, Wednesday? So, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. We're in day 7. Of the constitutional crisis that grips this nation, and yet few, if any, people beyond our little community are talking about it or acknowledging that. We are in a constitutional crisis. To quote that probably phony baloney Mormon prophecy, the Constitution hangs by a thread. And we are here to bear witness to it. Flavio, with a note, over at CNN, Manu Raju just now reported that Chuck Schumer is calling for an IG probe, Inspector General, into the DOJ overruling prosecutors to give Roger Stone a lighter sentence. Gerald Nadler says his panel will get to the bottom of it. Schiff says the Trump administration represents the gravest threat to the rule of law in a generation. Meanwhile, Addison McConnell of Sheffield, Alabama, declines to comment. Correction, says Steve in New York. Not just support, but vote for the nominee. And I wish I could get this. I wish we could more broadly disseminate this concept of this election being an act of patriotism. Because it will not be enough to beat him in a 50.5 to 49.5 election. That will make that election eminently stealable. And we'll wind up in the same place as we were when we woke up on the morning of November 9th, 2016. This has to be a wave. This has to be a tsunami. He has to be washed out to sea by the sheer numbers of the vote. It has to be unchallengeable. It has to be by so many millions of votes that he cannot overcome it with claims that busloads of illegal, massive prostitutians went into New Hampshire. And we have to take the Senate. And we have to hold on to the House. It's a tall order. I know. But the thing about hard work is that hard work is made less so when more people pull on the rope. Hard work is made less so when more people shoulder the load. Stop telling us how to feel about voting, Bob. But it's a fact. If you will get, if those who are engaged in abject worship of one candidate or another will stop it and commit to working their hearts out during the primaries, but say to themselves, voting in the general is going to be the most patriotic thing I have ever done, and no matter whom the candidate is, I'm going to do so joyfully, happily, and enthusiastically, then we have a chance. And no one in any electoral situation, no one in any struggle, can ask for more than a chance. I know, Steve in New York says, tell me you couldn't replace the sound of one of Nitwit Nero's rallies with the sound of a Nuremberg rally, and nobody would be the wiser. Bob, this has reached a new level of scary. It's no longer merely disgusting. It's actually frightening. Yeah, it is. Steve says, I'll go one further. Voting for Trump is the most treasonous thing a person could do without taking up arms against the government. Well, voting for Trump certainly does give aid and comfort to adversaries, if not outright enemies. Pooty will be thrilled to pieces. Xi Jinping will be thrilled to pieces. Duterte, that vicious murderer in the Philippines, will be thrilled to pieces. Mohammed bin Bonesaw will be positively ecstatic. Whatever various and sundry other benevolent dictators in the Middle East will probably be pleased because it means that they can go on taking candy from a baby. Or Jared, but I repeat myself. Yep. Yep, Steve, I agree. So here we are at the top of the hour, a little past. We have, again, $30 to go to finish last week's fundraising, which is stressful enough as it is. $30 to go on that, and then $200 for yesterday, $200 for today, and then we would be caught up. I'm sorry to hammer on this. I'm sorry to talk about it so much. Gosh, if we just had some of that Bloomberg money, I wouldn't have to, but we don't, so I do. There we go. Jimmy's getting in the spirit of things. In November, go to the polls all excited like you were when you were a kid on your first day of school. That'll work. So in the meantime, let's see, a couple of things I got to do. I've learned a little bit along the way. Okay, got to turn it off there. Making sure that the stress line is properly connected. We'll get there in a second. Because if you want to engage in some conversation, you are more than welcome so to do. The stress line number, of course, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And then Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn. And both will get you easily into the program, 304-574-8178, also rings on through through Skype. Okay, so that's strange. I know of at least a couple of people who got the podcast, but then again, I think they're taking it through White Rose. I don't know what the issue is, but Don in West Tennistan says, I don't know if the problem is on yours or Apple's, but yesterday's program failed to be available. I will. I'm back to perilously slow internet here, but I will upload this program, and then I will re-upload last night's program as well. Sorry about any confusion. Subject line, happily, joyfully, playfully. Damn it, Bob, now I got the logical song by Supertramp in my head. Well, Flavio, you know what, it could be worse. You could still be earwormed by what Scott in San Diego did to me. I mean, it's days now of wandering around. Hunter Biden, the Benghazi of our time. From now until November, you will not get it out of your mind. Brother Deacon Asa telling me the problem is on Podbean's end. Well, not a hell of a lot I can do there. Happily, joyfully, playfully. Yeah, that kind of makes me want to fire up Supertramp, but oh well. So it is Tuesday, and that means I can do something I haven't done in a while. And we can run the Green News Report. Our buddy Speed says, been to Oregon Pipe National Monument many times. Gorgeous. And that's in reference to the story we had a night or so ago, maybe Friday, about blowing up mountains to put through the stupid wall so it can fall over. Jesus. Hey, thanks very kindly to Irwin. Irwin, I appreciate it a bunch. We are now down to only $20 to go to finish last week's fundraising. And only 420. Hey, 420 to come up even through the 11th of February. Thank you, Irwin. Thank you a ton. I had a note a little bit earlier from Lady B. Going back to the business of Chuck Todd last night, using a quote from a right-wing rag favorably, comparing Bernie's supporters to the Nazi Sturmabteilung, the SA. That was the gang of brown-shirted bully boys that Hitler used to rise to power. It was run by Ernst Röhm, whom Hitler eventually had murdered. And today I saw a little too much nuance for my taste. People say, now, Chuck Todd didn't really say that they were brown shirts. He quoted from an article that referred to them as brown shirts. Funny how a multimillionaire like Chuck Todd can't get his staff to at least check the source. And that source in particular was just a filthy right-wing rag for something that he was about to quote. Lady B, I've gotten on the wrong side of her. Switching the earworm song from the logical song to the My Darling Clementine Hunter Biden song. Fuck you, Bob. That's all. Ooh, sorry. But, you know, all we got in common is our misery, so the least we can do is share it. Lady B says, more on Michael Harriott and Chuck Todd. I wanted to add more to that article, and it's a good one from over at, oh, darn it. What's the name of the website? Sorry. But Michael Harriott's a fantastic writer. I wanted to add more to that article because I want to elaborate and emphasize a certain point. If you do decide to someday discuss this, I'd rather it be in your voice, because if you understand this, then I know some kind of progress is being made. Well, I have a feeling I'll understand, because it's hard not to understand given the degree of clarity, high clarity, with which Lady B writes. Being black, being African-American, has its own American citizen niche because of the arbitrary and unnecessarily imposed restrictions on us and the physical and psychological effects it has on the entire country. We blacks aren't crazy or a bunch of whiners. We see the cognitive dissonance white folks engage in every day. It's a constant battle between fighting against perpetuating what you know is wrong versus using your dominant social status to stay on top and further your financial, political, and emotional standing. Like Chuck Todd, most white folks can bafflingly elevate their importance and usefulness far beyond what is asked for or even helpful. And for some reason, they have the support of the powerful to keep doing it. To paraphrase the author, just because you think you can do something you're not qualified to do doesn't mean you should get the opportunity to do it. Yet over and over again, unqualified whites are vaulted into positions that they invariably screw up. I mean, just start. Kellyanne Conway. You next. And then later expect the rest of us to join them. Donald Trump! And then expect the rest of us to join them in scratching their heads trying to figure out what went wrong. We know what went wrong. You weren't qualified and you fucked shit up. You shouldn't be given a pat on the back for at least having tried, and you goddamn sure shouldn't be financially rewarded for it. Steve Mnuchin? Anybody? I could go into the deeper discussion that it's obvious that all humans make mistakes and we're not infallible. That is, or at least should be, irrefutable. But as a black person, I'm here to testify that the distinction is rarely, if ever, applied in a black person's favor. Many white folks will toss us a splintered bone and then get mad when we choke on it. They don't care that we may not be as properly equipped as they are to not fail. We gave that brother sister a splintered bone, and then look what they did. Not only did they choke on that opportunity of a lifetime, they vomited it up on the good carpet. There are blacks holding jobs they shouldn't get, but their association with that fucked up opportunity will always follow their reputation. Zerlina Maxwell is gorgeous, but she shouldn't be at the helm of SiriusXM Progress. She's a political analyst and commentator. She is not a producer, program director, or even music director. She's not the first unqualified person to hold a job like that, but it doesn't matter. She'll be blamed for all the current problems SiriusXM Progressive Radio is having for years to come. Bitch was blinkered, ego-driven, and lacking self-awareness. But then again, bitch got a new house. She can afford to drive a Tesla. Yeah, most important, though, she got her fucking foot in the paid political commentator door. That's how you say fuck you to the man. Yay, Merca. Chuck Todd is one of the many symptoms of a cancer that is raging all through our American bodies. His white privilege is completely to blame. He thrives and survives in denial because he's surrounded by people who have gotten paid to and sleep quite well living in denial. And from the heart, what appears to be all Hakuna Matata for most white folks is soul-crushing for American non-whites, and that attitude alone acts as an effective barrier to us being able to communicate with each other and unite around a common cause. That common cause is the fact that the world's most prosperous country is slowly becoming an autocracy. I will add editorially, slowly or not slowly. Well, your mileage may vary. Let me hurry up and fucking summarize. Chuck's hiring did more harm to meaningful discourse between politicians and the public than any bullshit Trump could ever spout. So why aren't we talking about putting folks like Chuck under the jail? Why aren't we having meaningful discussions about punishing political propagandists, or at least those who act as willing mouthpieces for it? Why don't we save our democracy and deny folks like him and flush limp balls access to any media that lets them broadcast their ignorant views to the public? Why aren't they working as door greeters at Walmart already? Well, because Walmart eliminated the door greeters. Because Chuck Todd is white. Rich, but also white. No further explanation is either wanted, needed, or even a welcome thought to ponder. And that, to quote Shakespeare, is the rub. Love you as a person, forgive me. You're the only one who even considers listening, and you seem like you want to sincerely understand. And dude, I know it's not your sole burden to bear. You're white too, and can't and won't change that. But you're also Bob Friggin Kincaid. Compassionate, articulate, intelligent, internet radio personality, and social justice warrior. Your burden is heavy, but you have the power to help change the narrative. Don't burn out of it. Continue to use your powers for good. Thank you, Lady B. Thank you ever so kindly. I'll try. I know for a fact, for instance, I know now when we're going to be back in D.C., and my colleague even went so far as to check to make sure where we're going to be staying has internet adequate to get the program out. I thought that was really, really kind and considerate. So we'll try to be home every day in time to get a radio program out. May have to shift back to 6 to 9 or something like that. I don't know. Just because crawling around in D.C. traffic at the end of the day can be such a miserable bear to deal with, but we'll try to keep the work up, and I know so many of you help with that effort, and I'll let you know. And we're going to be trying to get new co-sponsors on the bill, so this might be a time to sort of ramp up your efforts and reach out to your members of the House if they haven't already signed on to HR 2050. This would be a great time to do it. But, you know, I think Lady B's point is well made. None of us have any control over who we are or how we got here. But we can make the human experience so much manifestly better if we simply try not to live as though, contrary to what John Donne wrote, we are an island. We are a part of the whole. And that involves simply putting aside whatever our ness is and trying to identify with the ness of someone who isn't us. So thank you for that, Lady B. Thank you for that immensely. And if you want to read, if you want to read what she's referring to, sorry, I was a little slow on the uptake, but it's at theroot.com. It is by Michael Harriet. And he doesn't know how to write bad prose. And I'm still trying to find where it opened. There it is. Michael Harriet writing, "Why does Chuck Todd exist?" And I'm not going to share any of it except for Michael Harriet's note, and God damn is he bad. Okay, a little bit more. "Unless you have a close personal friendship with Chris Saliza, you don't know anyone as bad at his job as Chuck Todd." Whoa. "After not graduating from college on a French horn scholarship, Todd was plucked out of obscurity by former Meet the Press host Tim Russert, who elevated the sentient slice of store-brand white bread to his eventual perch atop the most important political show on television, and goddamn, is he bad." And then Michael Harriet proceeds to bring the receipts, noting that the Washington Post called his attempt at hosting the first Democratic debate, quote, "a particular triumph of shallowness." And go from there. But again, theroot.com, "Why does Chuck Todd exist?" And the answers are, well, disturbing and yet somehow not at all surprising. So we are nearing the halfway point of the program. Ralps has jumped in with $10 to take us down to $4.10. And says, "I'll kick in 10 more if somebody else kicks in 10. So you've got a chance to turn your $10 into 30. If somebody out there has another $10. And that'll take us down to $3.90. And we will finally be finished with fundraising for last week. Yes. Billable Rick, I did, and I mentioned it at the top of the program. Asking for a friend, Giraffrey, Cleveland Joe's pet wild animal, wants to know if you received his contribution yesterday. To the extent that Giraffrey can hear, he didn't know whether you acknowledged his gift on yesterday's show. I did not, because I didn't see it till after the program ended, and consequently, I acknowledged it at the beginning of the program this evening. So, again, thanks to Joe and to Giraffrey. It is much appreciated. Yeah, I think you're right. Jack in Shreveport says, "You know, not only is Chuck Todd terrible, he's also director of the MSNBC news shows, I think. It would not surprise me in the least." Ralph says, "My niece voted in New Hampshire today. Yay!" Oh, wow. Brother Deacon Asa, really? Lady B is mistaken. You can, too, do something about your whiteness, Bob. You got all that extra coal laying around in your state of West Virginia. I know. I'll be kebabbed in hell. I deserve it. Well, it's, you know, that's the nice thing about Brother Deacon Asa. He acknowledges where these things lead. But he's been rough on dinner in a couple of time zones this evening. So anyway, we're at the halfway point. I haven't heard the Green News report in eons. So we will do that. And if you want to jump into the conversation, you're mightily welcome so to do. Otherwise, I'll just keep filibobstering. That, you know, is kind of entirely up to you. Hey, what's that, Randy? If you're near the coast like I am, you could have been dead 4 minutes ago and not even know it. And on the whole, it was a very good year for The Undertaker. Signed, Randy. Might have to flesh that out a little bit, Randy. Did I miss something? Let me know. So anyway, Green News Report. I'm not going anywhere. Don't you either.
It's Tuesday, February 11, 2020.
All bushfires across the state should be out by the end of the week.
Good news and bad news in Australia as destructive storms extinguish catastrophic wildfires.
This new study tells us that climate change is having a dramatic effect on bumblebee populations.
Sharp decline in bumblebees explained, plus...
Everybody wants to get into our market, and that's how we convince them that they've got to be right on climate, too.
Climate change through the lens of trade at the New Hampshire Democratic debate.
All of those stories and more in sharp focus straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Let's not get down too much. There is good news. Antarctica is 65 degrees right now, which means we're all going to die soon.
See? Cheer up. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, seriously, it was 65 degrees in Antarctica. That was warmer than it was on the same day out here in Beverly Hills, apparently.
Yeah, so if you want to escape the winter blues, go ahead and head on over to Antarctica.
Really?
Scientists there recorded a balmy 65 degrees, a new record high. And days later, NASA announced that yet another massive iceberg has broken off of the Pine Island Glacier in West Antarctica. It's the latest in a series of increasingly frequent calving events in the rapidly warming polar region.
Calving, of course, is when the iceberg breaks off.
Yes.
Okay.
Good news and bad news in Australia. The good news is that torrential rains have doused most of the catastrophic bushfires rampaging across the east coast of Australia over the last several months. The bad news is that the storms brought the heaviest downpours in 30 years in some areas, triggering flash floods that destroyed roads, bridges, and power lines. So the worst natural disaster Australia has ever experienced was replaced with a more of the mill natural disaster.
Wow. It's just one thing after another for poor Australia. It's like the epicenter of our climate crisis down there.
And Australia's insurance industry estimates that these new storms have caused nearly $50 million in damages, and that's on top of more than $2 billion in fire losses.
They cannot win for losing or lose for winning down under.
In the northern hemisphere, bumblebees are disappearing because of climate change. A disturbing new study has found that the number of regions in North America and Europe populated by bumblebees has dropped by nearly 50% since 1900. The researchers say the slow-moving bumblebees can't tolerate these more frequent intense heat waves that we're seeing with global warming, and they are not moving into cooler habitats fast enough. The scientists say it's another way that climate change is putting ecosystems at risk because bumblebees, like honeybees, are crucial pollinators. But they do say that everyday people can help by putting more native flowering plants into their gardens. Meanwhile, action on climate change was barely covered in the final 2020 Democratic debate before the New Hampshire primary.
Yeah, after it came up a whole bunch in the previous debate, almost nothing about it in the more recent one.
Yeah, and this time it was mostly because the seven candidates found ways to insert it into their answers. Here's Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders on military spending.
But maybe, just maybe, given the crisis of climate change, the world can understand that instead of spending $1.8 trillion a year collectively on weapons of destruction designed to kill each other, maybe we pool our resources and fight our common enemy, which is climate change.
Nah, we'll just keep putting $1.8 trillion per year into killing each other.
The ABC News moderators asked only one climate-related-ish question tied to President Trump's USMCA trade agreement with Canada and Mexico. Senator Sanders and billionaire Tom Steyer rejected the agreement because it doesn't mention climate change. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren and Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar both defended their votes in favor of the pact because of modest but immediate gains for workers. They said that future trade agreements can provide significant leverage. Here's Warren.
Everyone wants to get to the American market. We should be raising standards on climate around the world to get access to our market.
And here is Klobuchar.
When it comes to climate change, I think we have to have a North American trading bloc. We have to have Mexico and Canada and America working together.
And in fact, the European Union has proposed a carbon border tax, new tariffs on imported foreign goods from countries that don't take action to cut emissions from their manufacturing, like the United States.
I cannot wait until we do not have President Crazy Pants in the White House any longer, and we can actually debate these ideas and think about which ones make the most sense, which ones can be passed, which ones can't. Oh, that day can't come soon enough. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, or Google Play. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier.
Okay, I was a little slow on the uptake with Randy and PA talking about it. I could have been dead 4 minutes ago and didn't know it. He's talking about the time it takes nuclear ballistic submarines off the continental shelf of the U.S. to get a nuke to the cities on the East Coast. Ah, got it. Got it. And thank you very kindly again to Ralphs for the offer she's put on the table. If somebody will kick in $10, then we will get, we'll finally, she'll triple it, and we will finally get down to where we actually finished off last week, and we'll get a start on yesterday. So that would be wonderful. I want to take a minute to share something that, and offer a little bit of analysis, to the extent that I'm capable. Got a note from Darlene in Connecticut a few minutes ago. An article from Vox. Ruth Bader Ginsburg probably just dealt a fatal blow to the Equal Rights Amendment. And during the break, and yeah, I'm cheating a little bit. I took the time that we were in break to, or not in break, but I was listening to the Green News Report, but reading at the same time. Multitasker, that's what I am. And I read the article that Darlene sent along, and Darlene is justifiably frustrated with the upshot of the article. Because Monday, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, whom every decent human being in America hopes for a long, long life, like, you know, 120 or so, or at least until we can get a Democrat in the White House and maybe Mitch McConnell goes to his long home in hell. But Monday, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was giving an address at Georgetown University's law school. And the moderator of the discussion there, a federal appellate judge and moderator, like I said, moderator of the panel, named Margaret McCown, asked Justice Ginsburg about the ongoing effort to revive the Equal Rights Amendment. You might recall that earlier, I guess it was last month, the newly Democratic legislature of the state of Virginia ratified the Equal Rights Amendment, becoming the 38th state to do so. That's the 3/4 necessary to ratify a constitutional amendment. Only three states have ratified the ERA since 1977. And here's the problem, as Ruth Bader Ginsburg explained it, and as she sees it. A deadline was put on the ERA of 1982. Jesus, 38 years ago. For ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment. Law scholars with who talk through their teeth clenched and sit around with brown liquor clinking in a lead crystal rocks glass ice and that, whatever discuss the finer points of whether the congressional drop dead date of 1982 was valid. It would have to be litigated one way or the other. But responding to Judge McCown's question, Justice Ginsburg said, "I would like to see a new beginning for ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment." She added, "There's too much controversy about latecomers. Plus, a number of states have withdrawn their ratification, so if you count a latecomer on the plus side, how can you disregard states that said we've changed our minds?" Taking into account Idaho, Kentucky, Nebraska, Tennessee, and South Dakota, which had all voted to ratify the ERA, but then rescinded. So if it was to be litigated to the Supreme Court, it sounds as though, according to the Vox article, that Justice Ginsburg very well might be a no vote. And from the standpoint of just, hey, come on, let's at least try, it is perfectly understandable to be frustrated by the position that she took. But I do trust Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Now, and let's be clear, there's no such thing as a liberal wing of the court. There's no such thing as a liberal court. There's no such thing as a liberal system of justice, because the judicial system props up an inherently conservative system, namely the law. The law is always a generation or two, sometimes three or four, behind society when it comes to needed and necessary and innovations in the law. And because of the slow nature of the process, it takes a long time for concepts to go from nouveau to black letter law. You can look at some of the most vile and hateful aspects, say, of workers' compensation law, things like the assumption of the risk and the fellow servant rule that were used to such devastating effect to screw over working people in the 20th century. That damn near took forever to be put in proper context, and to this day are still fucking people over. So there's that. But I'm guessing here, and I may be wrong, but because she is as sharp as she is, and God, she's sharp, I might tend to agree with her. And here's the thing. It has absolutely nothing to do with the Equal Rights Amendment. It has everything to do with threats to our ongoing constitutional governance. We have talked on this program from time to time about the noxious notion of an Article 5 convention. Article 5 to the Constitution of the United States allows for the states, the several states themselves, to call for a constitutional convention absent any action by any branch of the federal government. The states can do it on their own. And while we don't hear so much about it right now, it is still an ongoing process, and it is still a fetish object of the white wing in this country and the maggots. They desperately want a constitution of the states so that they can go in and get rid of all the things they don't like. Right against self-incrimination, any notion that somehow or another the government shouldn't be all wrapped up in religion, and that fetish object of fetish objects, the idea that somehow or another the government should have a balanced budget every year, and Republicans and white wingers and maggots, is there really any difference between the three? They would like to have a balanced budget portion of the Constitution so that they could then do some of what Nitwit Nero seems to yearn for with his released budget from this past Monday. That is, gut the living fuck out of the social safety net. Destroy Social Security. Destroy disability payments. Destroy Medicare. Destroy Medicaid. SNAP, EBT, TANF, WIC. Get rid of it all so that America can finally be the libertarian paradise that they fantasize over and furiously masturbate over. Well, see, here's the thing about the Constitution of the States. On a raw count, we are perilously close to having a sufficient number of states to call a convention of the states. And if the ERA goes up to the Supreme Court and somehow or another you get a 5-vote majority that says that the drop-dead provision from 1982 is somehow invalid, and that even though Kentucky and Tennessee, et cetera, said they had rescinded their ratification of the ERA, that their original ratification was what matters, and so the ERA becomes part of the Constitution of the United States, based on notions of precedent and stare decisis, guess what the Supreme Court will have just done? They will have opened the door to the convention of the states, because there's a number of states within those that are counted as yay votes on the convention of the states who had previously rejected the idea, or states that had accepted the idea but done so long ago that you can argue that it is no longer the will of the people of the state that they be part of it. All of that would go up in smoke if Ruth Bader Ginsburg were to cobble together 5 votes on the Supreme Court to uphold the 38 states, including the states that have said they want nothing to do with it, subsequently. And all I can imagine is if somebody who had a cup of coffee in law school like I did can sort that out, that there's a decent chance that Ruth Bader Ginsburg has done the same. What's curious is that they don't say. I scanned it, but I think I got the gist of the article. That calculus doesn't seem to be in there anywhere. And my God, if you think everything in the United States of America has been a shitstorm and a shit show since January 20th, 2017, you ain't begun to see nothing yet until you begin to ponder what a bunch of white-winged tools would do to the Constitution given the opportunity via a convention of the states. Because, you see, even Hamilton Hamilton, who set up the first constitutional convention by hijacking another meeting, knew and wrote that when you open a constitutional convention, all bets are off. They can say, oh, we're only going to put in a balanced budget amendment, and that's all we're going to do. And then some asshole in the back of the room says, Mr. Speaker, or Mr. President, I object to closing this here Constitution. We got to do something about the 13th Amendment. And then the horse is out of the burning barn and has the bit in his teeth, and away we go. Darlene says, I see your point, but ironic how women's rights are sacrificed again. I understand, too. But if you think, imagine what would happen to women's rights in a convention of the states run by a bunch of wild-eyed maggots with the full support, financial, spiritual, legal, and otherwise, of outfits like ALEC. Read a news story today about how ALEC wrote a bill here in West Virginia. There's so many pernicious pieces of shit on the agenda out of this goofball legislature. I can't even recall which one it was, but as I was listening to it, I was, come on, come on. Nobody in the West Virginia legislature had the brains to come up with this on their own. You know they didn't. I know they didn't. Where'd they get the idea? Intrepid, plucky West Virginia public radio reporter. Where'd they? And lo and behold, way down at the bottom of the story, they finally ran like, saying the bill mirrors model legislation promulgated by ALEC. Mirrors my ass. It's a cut and paste job. These lazy Republican fucks in legislatures like West Virginia's, they don't want to do any work. What do you think ALEC is for? To keep them from having to. So, man. They are a... You know who they are and what they are. Damn. So, I don't like it. I'd like to see the Equal Rights Amendment ratified. But I think you kind of have to do it like Ruth Bader Ginsburg says, with no questions and no lack of clarity. Hi, Clarity. That's my 2 cents worth. So, you know, of course, you've got that means that if you're starting from jump, that means everybody the ERA would probably have to be redrafted, reintroduced in both houses of Congress, passed by the requisite majorities in both of those houses before it even went to the states. And that's not inspiring either. Not by a long shot. Jimmy with a note referring to what Lady B said a few minutes ago. I'm inclined to agree with where I think Lady B was going. Everyone has the power for greatness, not for fame, but greatness, because greatness is determined by service. MLK Jr., it's not a struggle when we work together. Keep up the great work, Bob and the Horn family. Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you so much. It's not a struggle when we work together. So again, still waiting on that $10 to roll in, so Ralph's can triple it and finally wipe out Friday and then get started on yesterday. Meanwhile, let's run over and check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hi, Bob. How the fuck are you doing?
I'm so sick of February, I could bark.
Yeah, and I mean, it's February, you know, is Black History Month. So, you know, this day in Black History. No, just kidding. It's, you know, I can't complain.
That's the only redeeming thing about it.
It's the only redeeming thing about February. I mean, out here, we've had lovely weather, except for the winds. It's been picking up. I mean, this morning, it was fucking windy. I mean, I was driving, and I kind of get the gangster lean when I'm driving, you know, Diamondback, some rooftop, digging the scene with the gangster lean. Woo-hoo. Okay, yeah, I went there. But I had the tendency to drive with one hand, you know, draped gingerly over the steering wheel. And I lean when I drive. But I was doing that this morning, and the wind, a gust of wind came up around the taxi. I'm like, oh, shit. I had to, like, grab on with both hands and hold on to the wheel because I was like, uh-oh. And the signs have been coming up about, you know, dangerous, gusty winds and shit like that. I mean, picking up people's lawn and patio furniture and shit, windy. People, and it's like, wow. So yeah, we've had I guess, you know, the early March winds already. I'm like, what the fuck? But it's been really cold, like frost warnings. I know it's nothing in comparison to what you guys are doing happening in your neck of the woods, and I feel the eye roll right now from what
I'm not rolling anything,
liar. I feel it.
I'm so not because it's just we are at total ground saturation here. I live up on a fairly high piece of ground, and everywhere you step, it squishes.
Ew.
No snow. Ew. You know, it's just sodden and 40 shitty degrees. We're gonna get some 15 here in a little while, and we'll be free. That's gonna come, and ugh.
No, the coldest has gotten, I mean, because, you know, I'm running in the morning before the sun comes up. And it's about 35, 40. And for me, that's hateful. For me, that's like stay your ass in the house and just running a treadmill. But in all honesty, I don't like running on a treadmill. I mean, the treadmill for me,
makes you feel like a gerbil.
I say what, baby?
Makes you feel like a gerbil.
It does. And also, but you know what it's good for? The treadmill is really good for hill repeats. And also interval training is really good for that because it forces me to run faster than I would if I was just doing it on my own. And it forces me to do hills. Because I'm not going to do a hill on my own. I'm going to be like, fuck you, no. And I'm definitely not going to do intervals on my own. Again, fuck you, no. So intervals and hills, you know, make you a stronger, faster, and it helps you with your, I mean, because I'm not, you know, it's not for me. It's definitely not about speed, but it's about endurance and building up my, you know, my lung capacity and all that other bullshit. So that's, you know, that's the one. That's the good thing about the treadmill. But in all honesty, I mean, not really liking a treadmill, but for all the things that it is good for things like that. And really, it is good for when I need to do it. Like, there's been times when I sat on my ass all goddamn day. Just like, fuck, I'm not doing anything. No. And then I sit down, and I've been sitting, and then I realize, God damn it, I need to do something. And it's just way too late to go outside because Jan don't have a hissy about going out late at night running. And then I can get on the treadmill. So it does, it really does have its advantages. I could do a quick, you know, 2-mile, 3-mile run on a treadmill watching a television show or what have you, and next thing I know, I've done the run, it's over, and it's good. So, you know, there are definite advantages. If you said to me, did I just say a quick 2-3 mile run? Did I say that?
You said that.
Okay. I still
which is cool.
I still find that crazy that I can do that. That, I mean, like, and when I say quick, I'm not saying, you know, quick, like, you know, a 10-minute mile or anything like that. No, no, you know, even though on Sunday I did an eight-mile run, and I had the splits. And when I do runs, of course, when you first start, I hate when I first start, and then, but, you know, it's like a 17-minute, 16-minute. But at a couple of points in the run, I actually did like a 13-minute. There was like a couple of 13-minute miles, and there was a 14. There was like a couple of 13-minute miles, a couple of 14-minute miles in there, and that was on the second half of the run, which was amazing. So, you know, that's exciting. But anyway, enough of the running part. Let's talk about Lady B, who I love her. About the, you know, the white people can say and do whatever the fuck they want to do because they're white. Because I had a situation like that. It's a perfect segue to what I want to talk about. I went out to eat with some friends on Sunday. And I disrupted my whole schedule because on Sunday I was going to do something else. But some friends called and, hey, let's, you know, want to try this new place. Let's go to brunch. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, let's go. So we go, and, you know, downtown LA, and it's the Intercontinental, blah, blah, blah. And so we're talking, you know, because Sunday was Oscar night. And so the discussion was, are you going to watch the Oscars? And I said, well, you know, not so much. I'll tape it. And, you know, if more than likely I'll watch it the next day. And if there's any highlights that, you know, I hear about, then I'll fast forward or what have you. I said, because there's really nothing other than maybe, because I knew that Cynthia Erivo was not going to win for Best Actress because Renee Zellweger had that locked down. Yeah. I saw Judy, and I'm sorry, she had it locked down. I saw that shit. I'm like, oh, well, no. There's nobody that's going to even come remotely close to Renee Zellweger. And so...
I'll have you know, by the way, that for years now, Agnes does this. It's not so much the words.
It's a squint.
But it's the squint. Agnes has the Renee Zellweger squint down to a science.
Oh, Bob, and she does a squint. There is such a thing as the Renee Zellweger squint. It's like the woman perpetually is like, dude, do you need glasses? Or is the sun always in your eyes? What is it? You know, so there was nobody that was going to beat her. And the only thing I was hoping for her was maybe she would get best song for the song she did for Harriet. But, you know,
I don't even know. Agnes and I saw her singing that. And Agnes looks at me, taps me on the shoulder and holds her arm over, and like she's got goosebumps.
Yes, the woman is amazing. And had she won, she would have been, you know, the youngest EGOT winner ever.
Yeah, I was rooting for the EGOT, and well, I mean,
I was rooting.
Okay, Elton John, I guess, whatevs.
Whatever, but it's like, motherfucker, sit down. You got enough shit going on. Come on, man. But it is, you know, whatever. But I was happy about Hair Love winning. I said, oh, okay, so they did give, you know, I don't know if anybody else black won, but at least I know one black person won. So the conversation was, I said, well, you know, and just like I said, this was before the Oscars, and I said, well, there's really nothing representing, there's no representation really for, and I said, there's how many people, there's four acting categories in the Oscars, and only one black person, or just one person of color. Well, no, I take it back, because wasn't Jennifer Lopez nominated too? I always forget, because, you know, she very rarely plays a woman of color.
I get lost because everything just shifted for me when I predicted that right-wingers would have a hissy over Bong Joon-ho speaking Korean, you know, because he's Korean. And then with a matter of minutes, bang, there it was.
Mm-hmm. How dare you, you know, how dare this person come and speak in, you know, his native language and have an interpreter?
But not just that. These people are ruining America.
I hate people. I hate white people. So, stop.
Hate to break this
to
you.
What did I do now?
Pretty sure that tweet was not sent by a white people. That was not a white people tweet.
Uh-oh. They were black people. Let me tell you, because when they chose Cynthia, I always mess up her name, to play Harriet, the Negroes lost their shit. How you going to get somebody that's not from this here country to play Harriet Tubman? What, there's nobody, no black actress, American black actresses that could play Harriet Tubman? That part.
They're just better at it than we are. I don't care what the skin color is. They're just better trained.
They're classically trained actors.
Let me see. I want to make sure I'm not wrong. And so it should pop pretty quick and easy.
So Michael Harriet wrote an article about Chuck Todd while you're looking for this?
Yes.
And it's The Root, by the way.
It's The Root. I picked up on that.
Okay.
Okay.
I wasn't sure because my broadcast kept going out on and out. So now I got to look for that because it must have been amazing because it's Michael Harriet. I'm surprised it didn't pop up on mine. The only thing that popped up on my feed for The Root is about Dwayne Wade, about his 12-year-old transgender going by Zaya.
And Billie Eilish was like totally confused.
I don't know what's going. She's special.
Oh, okay. So Chrissy Teigen took dude to the cleaners for his shitty little tweet.
Chuck Todd asked why Obama made America elect Donald Trump. Is this the article?
No. Why does Chuck Todd exist is the article.
Yeah. Why does Chuck Todd exist?
Yeah.
Despite having ball handling skills that resemble a Caucasian clapping at a Pentecostal gospel concert. In spite of posing.
Yeah, John. I served as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. For this one, and yeah, John Miller, who wrote the shitty tweet, is not white Pippo. He just tweets like them. And Chrissy Teigen responded, "What a dumb fucking tool you are! Your family's embarrassed at gatherings. They're literally like, 'How's John doing that dumb little fuck tool?' And everyone goes, 'Yeah, we don't care. He's a fucking dumb shit. Come say hi if you're out tonight.'"
I like Chrissy Teigen.
Oh, but how do you not?
Oh, and that is so funny that you said, because I guess what I'm making for dinner tonight from one of her cookbooks. It's the Parmesan chicken, kind of a, it's not even, it's not, it's a chicken, it's like a, that you with olive oil, you take, you put like, paprika and like chili powder, not chili powder, whatever, and you, there's salt and pepper, and you take it, and you take the olive oil, and you smooth it, you know, rub it over with the chicken and with the seasoning, and then you sprinkle Parmesan cheese on it, and then you bake it. And then while that's baking, then you, well, after it's baked, then you salt, you cut up really thin slices of garlic and chili and chili flakes and sauteed onions, not onions, I'm sorry, spinach. So that's dinner tonight, and got that out of Christy Teigen's cookbook. I think I sent you pictures of that. And that's what's for dinner tonight.
That sounds yummy. And I bet, oh, you got, so I bet you, I bet you got it. You got nice Greek joints you can go to for a nice plate of moussaka if you want, based on the conversation Todd and I were having last night.
Yes, I was listening to that off and on. My, something was happening with my radio last night when I was on my way home. But anyway, so back to the Oscars. And so the, and the conversation, and white, what white, especially white, privileged white men can say and get away with shit. Well, not with me. And so, and even though we were in public, he almost got bitch slapped and thrown out the window of the 60, thrown out of the window from the 69th story. So I, you know, and I just offhandedly said, well, you know, there's not a really a whole lot of things that I really care about, what, you know, about the Oscars, because, you know, Oscars so white, as usual. And so, and then he says, now this is somebody that's supposed to be woke. Well, you know, just because people are black doesn't mean they should be nominated. I thought his husband was going to pass out when he said it. And I just looked at him, because, of course, when we go out.
Well, who out there is making that argument?
I never said that, just because I said I never said that. I just said there should be more representation. The only thing I said was, I said that, you know, I said the caliber of the movies that were nominated, not so much. The Irishman, Bob, do you know how many times I tried to watch that movie and I just finally fucking gave up? It was so fucking boring. And let's face it, the only reason, in my opinion, the only reason why that motherfucker was nominated, Scorsese, Pacino, De Niro, and Pesci. Well, I enjoy.
That's a murderer's row of casting. I mean,
right. I mean, have you? I mean, and Horn family. You know what? Come for me if you feel that that movie was amazing. Let me know. But to me, it was boring.
Well, I know people who do.
You know, it's like, well, good, but I don't. I, you know, my baby brother thought it was amazing, and I'm like, well, good on you. But I, you know, to me, a lot of times people find and think things are amazing just because of who's in it. It's like those restaurants that have been around forever and people keep going, even though it's not as good as it used to be. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, it's just people are just fucking used to, it's like, and okay, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I enjoyed the movie. You know, it was a good movie.
God,
it was a great
Dan
movie.
Fisher hates the movie.
Thank you, Dan. I didn't hate the movie, but I was like, again, I mean, it's like, okay, Quentin Tarantino. You know, Brad Pitt was good. Was it Oscar worthy? I don't know. You know, because what is Oscar worthy? Because you're telling me that, you know, I saw quite a few movies last year that were amazing movies, in my, you know, humble opinion, as, you know, as a paying customer.
Yeah, you see a lot more movies than I do.
Right. But, and I got to pay for the shit. So I have I have more invested into whether or not I feel a movie is good. You know what I'm saying? So if the shit ain't good and I pay $20 or whatever the fuck I paid to see the bitch, then I'm going to be kind of pissed if the shit isn't worth me seeing. Now, you saw Dolomite Is My Name, or they call me Dolomite. I always mess it up. That movie was amazing. Didn't even get a whisper.
No, but Eddie got a mention from the stage.
By who?
I think Brad Pitt.
Probably. He should have gotten a nomination. The movie, I can't think of the name of the movie, with Michael B. Jordan and Jamie Foxx. Didn't even get a mention. And they did all the stuff they were supposed to do. They did the circuit. They did everything they were supposed to do. Didn't even get a fucking mention. The movie Queen and Slim, another movie that was amazing. Didn't even get a fucking mention.
Well, I don't take the Oscars as any kind of indication of cinematic merit.
No.
Dan might take me to task on that, but there are so many great movies that didn't get touched, and so many great actors.
Not one woman got nominated for Best Director. Not one. Not one.
And I think Little Women just came out too late. That sounds like an excuse, but timing's everything, because all of these nominations are products of relentless campaigns that the ordinary moviegoing public does not see. Swag bags and the—and I mean, there is more courting going on there than there is down to the barbecue at 12 Oaks.
Do you know? I did not know this, but when a movie is released, they actually have, or the studios or whatever, they fucking have departments that basically. All that department does is for, like you said, courting for that movie for award season.
Yeah, and a good, so okay, here's a good comparison. It's the same thing with the Heisman in college football.
Right. I'm going to go with you with that.
Well, I mean, to work with me, because if you're a major college and you've got a Heisman hopeful, you've got a department that does nothing but tout the Heisman hopes of that player.
Yep, and that's how it is about the
Oklahoma, Notre Dame, Alabama, LSU, USC, Oregon, Washington, all of these major programs, and every major studio has the same thing relative to the Academy Awards.
And then again, also, even within those studios, now, if the studio doesn't promote a quote unquote black film or what have you, no matter how good it is, because, like, for example, Queen and Slim, and hopefully it's probably, because I think it came out over the summer or late summer, early fall. So I'm pretty sure it's probably on demand now. But that movie came out, Bob, and it was gone within 2 or 3 weeks. The studios, even when it's a good, a good movie, they don't promote certain movies like they do other movies, if you get my drift. You know, so Queen and Slim was, it was gut-wrenching, and it was shot so beautifully. Whoever was the cinematographer, because like when The Color Purple came out in 1985, it was one of the first times whoever was a cinematographer shot us the right way, our skin tones and our colors, because there were so many different shades of black people in that movie, and it was like for the first time we looked good on screen. It was beautiful, and to see us looking beautiful on screen, it's like, wow. And whoever shot Queen and Slim, it was just, it's those things, it's called representation. But like I said, when my friend said what he said, and I'm like, why would, I said, look, when he's like, well, there was just must not have been any good black actors. I said, there was probably a lot of black actors that are in movies that, but they weren't, you know, when the voting body of the Academy is overwhelmingly white. And when you have, the same people, when they court and when the same people are presented, year after year, again, Scorsese, Tarantino, and stuff like that, that's what you're going to get. Do you know how happy I was that the brother from South Korea won and that he swept all the categories? Do you know that I did it because I was actually, I did watch that part of the live broadcast. I did a happy dance. I was so happy that he won. That I was just like, thank you, that somebody, you know.
Right, he was gracious. He was gracious as hell on the director the director win, because he name checked Martin Scorsese, and all of his other fellow nominees.
Yeah, he said I'm going to drink until tomorrow. That part had me dying.
By the way, Ron and Raleigh points out. Bruce Lee's daughter did not like the way her father was portrayed in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And Martin Scorsese throwing shade on the Marvel Cinematic Universe, saying it isn't cinema. Is he the arbiter of what is cinema? He's been making the same movie for decades. Fuck him.
Same movie for motherfucking decades.
Well, you know, and I thought about, I mean, he has made some fantastic films. By the same token, what if he had used his storytelling skills on something besides The Mob?
The Mob. Is there anything other than The Mob and Scorsese's life? For God's fucking sakes. Even Francis Ford Coppola got away from The Mob after a while. And now he's like, fuck it, I'm just going to make wine. I'm done.
Jimmy in the Great Northwest says, The Irishman, I saw it, I liked it. It took me two times to finish it. On the other hand, my favorite was Dolomite, watched it twice, loved it.
You know how many times I watched Dolomite, Bob? 3-4 times. People come over to my house. I'm telling you. So if you come to my house and you're chilling at my house and we just kicking it or what have you, I'm like, have you seen, you know, My Name is Over? No, you haven't seen it? Okay, let's watch it. I mean, I've seen it like 3 or 4 times. I hold people kind of hostage at my house to watch, you know, they call me though. Yeah. Because that movie's my shit. Because, see, the thing about that movie is two things about that movie, or maybe several things, and, you know. It shows Los Angeles when I was growing up as a kid in Los Angeles, that part. It shows a part of Los Angeles that Los Angeles of the late 70s, early 80s that I've forgotten about. And the neighborhoods of South Central before it became, you know, before the crack wars of the 80s. And my neighborhoods were, and the neighborhood was destroyed. It showed a man not giving up, with doors constantly being slammed in his face, and he's like, "Fuck this! I'm going to do something for me and my community," because when you have people saying you don't matter, when he's sitting in this movie, the front page. And he's going, and the white people sitting around him are just laughing. And he's looking around like, I don't find this shit funny at all. But I want to see something. I want to see something for my folks that are funny, because we deserve entertainment as well. We deserve to laugh, and we got money to pay for our own. We got money to pay for our entertainment. That part. Now, conversely, do I like? Would I have ever, and it also gave me a whole new appreciation for Rudy Ray Moore, because I'm going to be 100% honest and transparent about Rudy Ray Moore and me and Dolomite growing up and all that shit. I'm like, I would never in a million years have watched I watched the Dolemite movie, and I'm like, to me, Dolemite was the Madea of his time. That part. Okay? But then, like I said, I give Tyler Perry so much props because of I know Tyler Perry's story. See, I never knew Rudy Ray Moore's story. And now once I saw, you know, the movie, then I'm like, okay, now I have a whole new appreciation for Rudy Ray Moore because of who he was and what he went through and all he wanted to do was just be somebody and bring his folks with him. That's all. But again, I mean, it's like, and then the main part of that movie was Eddie Murphy. Because I have missed Eddie Murphy so much. And to see him be Eddie Murphy again it took me back to the Eddie Murphy of the 80s. And it just made me smile. And you know what it did?
Yeah,
it
but the thing for me watching that was the wonderful character work that he did, because that wasn't Eddie Murphy to me.
Right. It showed that he didn't have to be a clown. Okay. It showed me that there was that he was somebody else. And I think it showed him that he could be so much more. And then, but another scene stealer in that movie, Wesley fucking Snipes.
Oh.
Wesley Snipes was a fucking amazing. He was another scene stealer. He was another showstopper. Did you expect that performance from Wesley Snipes, Bob?
No. No, that was fantastic.
No. He was fantastic. That, like I said, I had no preconceived notion or anything on what to, because like know, I said,
I'm gonna interrupt you for a minute here because we've talked about this briefly, but you know, the way Eddie Murphy revived the or restored the history of Dolemite. I would love to see him or somebody else take up the story of another of and I mean what a hell of a story it is. I've mentioned it, early 20th century, you know, up to like 1919 into the 1920s, African American comedian who was commanding huge salaries.
Oh, you told me about him. What was his name again?
And I'm trying to let me see if I've got it right here.
Because you told me about him, I had never even heard of him.
He was revered by people like W.C. Fields. And just made horse gagging loads of money. Had to fight against, you know, the institutional racism of the era. And there are still little clips of his work that you can find on YouTube. And I'm having a hard time finding his name, but, and I learned about it entirely by accident. Because there is a.
Look through your messages to me because you sent me.
It was so long ago. I'd be scrolling from now till noon tomorrow. But he, I learned about him by accident because of a bit by Phil Harris called the Darktown Poker Club, which is about a running poker game in Darktown, which is another way of, you know, not going to go there. Burt Williams. There. Thank you, Jimmy. Yeah. Thank you. Jimmy in the Great Northwest. Burt Williams. Look him up. And if and see, that's one of the things that's frustrating. There are so many great stories out there that'll never be told. But
if somebody
like a Tyler Perry or an Eddie Murphy or a, you know, who, hell, Spike Lee.
I'm still waiting for the story.
His story. My God.
I'm still waiting for the biography on the movie for Ida B. Wells.
Well, that too.
Talk about, you know, the first Black Lives Matter person, you know. She's the one that got it started.
There was Jimmy ready as the horn ad hoc research department.
Ad hoc.
Jimmy knows. And there are, you know, little black and white snippets. November 12th, 1874. I mean, this is a black dude who worked in blackface. Okay.
Because he had to.
November 12th, 1874 to March 4th, 1922. Bahamian American, one of the preeminent entertainers of the vaudeville era. The best-selling black recording artist before 1920. The New York Dramatic Mirror in 1918 called him one of the great comedians of the world. He insisted on being paid commensurate with his white counterparts. W.C. Fields said he was the funniest man I ever saw and the saddest man I ever knew. There's a black and white poker routine you can find on YouTube. There's a short called A Natural Born Gambler. And maybe we'll take, you know, because there are other names that are better known, but this is just and it's silent stuff. And it's, you know, it's black folks in a black bar, black bartender, black people in frock coats, black men, and they're gambling and rolling dice, and it's all very physical and visual humor. And it's profound.
Oh, so much talent.
And so much of what he did has been lost. Let's see here. Yeah, okay. Here's a piece, and it'll probably fuck. I'm sure it'll fuck up the recording. But God, it was 1906, so it ought to be. You'd think it would be. It would be in the public domain by now. But let's see if we can get some of that going.
Nobody, sung by Burt Williams. When life seems full of clouds and rain, and I am full of nothing and pain, who soothes my thumping, bumping brain? When winter comes with snow and sleet, and
there's a video. I guess it's the recording set to one of his silent pieces. But his is an amazing story. And I'm surprised somebody, because it's not like he's obscure. I mean, Jesus, he was making making the equivalent of $1 million a year in 1919.
What happened to him? How did he, when
did
he die?
Of course he died horribly. He was a fearless comedian. There's a photo of him in a chicken suit, you know. But the point being, there are so many stories that badly need to be told, and probably won't unless they get unless they get the backing of somebody, you know, huge. Oh, and by the way, it was disheartened to find that I guess there's a feud between Spike Lee and Tyler Perry.
Did not know that.
Yeah,
but I'm not surprised.
Spike Lee referred to what Tyler Perry does as coonery.
Well, that is, well. But see, this is the problem. See, it's that circular firing squad thing. You know, it's like what, you know, not that, you know, he has to like what Tyler Perry does. Howfenever. I'm not a Spike Lee fan. Never really. There's only two movies that Spike Lee. Well, now three.
You know, I don't know why one practitioner of an art has to tear down another practitioner of an art.
That part. It's like, dude. It's like, you know, you guys could be working together, or don't talk about each other at all. You know, it's like. I mean, okay, now, if you're calling somebody out for being an idiot, that's one thing. You know, okay, you know, like when Chrissy Teigen calls motherfuckers out, that's one thing. But when you're just doing the ass, you know, dickability assholery thing, that's a whole nother thing. It's like, look, you know, I'm not a huge fan of either one of them, to tell you the truth. But again, I know what Tyler Perry went through and everything that he's done to get to where he is. So you got to give the brother respect and props on what he's done. I just wish he would get a writing circle and get some people in there to help him and, you know, get some, you know, more help with his scripts, because he keeps writing the same shit. He's like Martin Scorsese. He keeps telling the same stories over and 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 over again. Over and over and over and over again. Again.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say enough about Burt Williams, though. I mean, you asked what did he die of. The man was a consummate performer. He got pneumonia. He was playing in Detroit. He would not go on. So he collapses on stage in Detroit. In 1922, the audience originally thought it was a bit.
He part of the act.
They got him back to his dressing room, and he looked up and said, "Well, that's a nice way to die." They was laughing when I made my last exit. But he made it home to New York City. He died at 47. Alcoholism and insomnia and, you know, just fighting his damn fight to live were a big part of his demise. But the public freaked out when he died. 5,000 people filed past his casket. Thousands more got turned away. And he had broken the color barrier at the Grand Masonic Lodge in Manhattan. And they held his private funeral service there.
Shit. You know. Speaking of, then they opened their doors, and
2,000 more people showed up.
Well, here's the deal. Speaking of funerals and people in mourning of and the sudden death of somebody. Now, you know, Kobe, the memorial service is on the 24th of February. And am I going? Probably not. Because I can't do that many people, because it's going to be a fucking madhouse. But all the grief, all the outpouring of grief and love and all this stuff that's going on because of Kobe Bryant's, you know, sudden and tragic death.
Oh, by the way, I got and hold on, because I got a question from Darlene for you. Oh, and I have an announcement to make. Huge thanks. Ralph's challenge got met and then some.
Yay.
Awesome. And so that took us down to 380, which means we did finally wipe out last week. And that challenge, let me make sure I get everything right here. that challenge got met by Roberto. Thank you, Roberto. And then Don in West Tennistan jumped in and took us down to, get this, 260. So that is huge.
Huge.
Don said, I dislike fees to intermediaries, so I'll do it by check. And that took, that's tremendous. So thank you so much all the way around. We got done with last week, and we got done with $140 of yesterday. So that makes tomorrow not quite as terrifying.
Good.
But I have a question for you coming in since you mentioned Kobe. From Darlene in Connecticut. I'd love Tracy's take on the controversy concerning Snoop Dogg, who I really love, and Gail King, who's meh to me, and she got her start in Connecticut, but I do think that CBS, is that who she works for, screwed her over, but I digress, over the interview about Kobe. I know it's pop culture, but the whole thing is bugging me. Snoop's a good person, but threatening physical harm, I don't want to do any white-splaining either. Help, looking for a friend. you know what she's talking about.
Yeah, I know. So this is my take on, and I'm speaking for the entire black race, well, black women in general.
It's your job.
Okay. So here's my take on Snoop Dogg. And I've never really been a fan of Snoop Dogg. That's point one. Point two, Kobe Bryant, while he was a good person to, you know, he loved his family, he loved his daughters, he did something terrible to, and he himself admitted, he said that, you know, I did something wrong. I made a mistake. Now, did he ever, you know, he felt that it wasn't consensual. His words. And also, everybody's screaming, why you guys are bringing this shit up after he died? Nobody's brought it up since. I'm like, lie. Because when he won the Oscar 2 years ago, it was brought up again. Because people were pissed off about with the Me Too also, as a matter of fact. When he won the Oscar in 2018. That part. Now, as far as Gail King, you know, I'm not a big fan of her either because, again, you know, you got lucky. I mean, hey, I'm not mad at the sisters. Kind of like what, you know, whoever Lady D brought up in on, you know, sister got her start or whoever. She wasn't really qualified, but hey, you know, you got your foot in the door. Hopefully you'll bring other sisters, you bring other people to look like you in as well. Because Gail, again, is meh to me too. I've never liked her. I think she's just, you know, lucky that Oprah's her friend. But the fact that if you do an entire interview with Lisa Leslie, and the only part of the interview that CBS decides to air or the, you know, the only part that they advertise is the part where you ask Lisa Leslie about, you know, the rape or the alleged rape, that's some bullshit. It's really fucked up because there was an entire interview. Now, Snoop Dogg going after a sister like that is like, again, you don't go, I'm very, very, very tired of black men going after black women. And I'm very taught because, see, if you listen to, you know, like I said, never.
Well,
been
I guess,
really
but
been
is
a fan.
is the question reason why he, if we step back for a moment from the coarseness of his critique, is the reason he brought it up valid? That, you know, the old idea that you don't shit on somebody the minute they die.
Well, you know, it was like I said, I don't think she should have said that. You know, to me, it's like the man is dead. He just died. Why, of all the things you wanted to ask about Kobe Bryant, why would you even bring that up? What was the necessity of it? You know, it really was unnecessary.
I mean, it called something to mind for me because I remember when the whole thing was going down, and I remember a conversation with Sandra about it. And Sandra was just totally creeped out by the details of it because of some of the stuff that basically was not in contention. Like Kobe, he's not a freaking steakhouse. Kobe. Yeah, I'm Kobe. Sorry. Yeah. Kobe publicly acknowledging that he... Oh, Jesus, really?
Then he choked her.
Well, no, and then did her up the butt.
Right, anal.
And he, you know, and just saying, well, you know, that's how I roll. That's the kind of guy I am. And I remember Sandra just going, "Oh, goddamn, oh." And you know, at the time, and I guess they reached what, an out of court financial settlement, and it all went away.
That all went away.
So the prosecutor didn't want any part of it, and when the victim comes to you and says, you know, I'm all good, I don't want to participate anymore.
What are you going to do?
Then what's the prosecutor going to do?
I mean, had that happened now, it'd be a whole different thing. And that's we would have been, you know, this is a Me Too thing. It would have been a whole different thing. It would have been, for him. But to me, and this is my take on, and you know, I'm not, you know, I am not defending rape culture at the fuck all, considering my life and the things that have happened to me at the hands of men. So let me be perfectly clear on this. Because I don't know what went down. I don't know if it was rape. I have no idea because I was not there. And this woman is, you know, because what hurt me, what made me crazy about the whole thing are the people who, after he died, came back and was saying, well, somebody in Colorado was happy. You know, I'm like, I'm pretty sure. I mean, but like I said, I have, you know, being a survivor of sexual assault, I have wished my assailant and the person who violated me dead. I'm not going to lie. So, you know what? If he did rape her, she might be wishing him dead. But that's for her. It's not for anybody else to say or make that decision for her. That's on her and what she wants to deal with. However, In my opinion, as far as Kobe Bryant and what he did or did not do, again, what he's made of himself since then, because they're like, well, what about Harvey Weinstein and Bill Cosby? Bill Cosby is in jail. Those motherfuckers are unrepentant. Okay.
And maybe there's some value there, and maybe the repentance was manifested in whatever the monetary settlement was and the, what, 40-carat diamond that he bought?
His wife?
Yeah.
And what he, all the stuff that he was doing.
And what he then went on to do. And what he then went on to do in terms of dedicating himself to the lives of his daughters.
Of his daughters,
maybe,
exactly.
Maybe people can learn.
Maybe, because again, people do stupid shit. And not. Because, unfortunately, we do live in a fucking rape culture. And until somebody stands up and tells you, motherfucker, that's not cool. Because you see, with everything around you, and you see that shit is okay with the objectification and everything, you know, what you see on TV and all that. And you see what women are supposed to be able to do. And you think that shit is cool. And it's like, and everything is cooling, and you know, and who knows, everything might have, remember, your eyes may say, you know, your mouth may say no, but your eyes say yes. That's the culture that people grew up in. That part. And again, not justifying the fuck if he did rape that, what I'm saying. But I have, like I said, date rape is real. Been the victim of it, you know. A lot of times a woman will just lay there and, like, just get it over with. That's rape, you know. But you don't know at the time, didn't know it was rape. Because I didn't want to be there. I was not a willing participant. But it's like, what am I going to do? Go, you know, cry rape? You were there. You were drinking, whatever. What did you have on? What were you drinking? Do you really want to go through that shit? No. So, I'm looking at Kobe Bryant from after what happened to who he became. Because after that incident, now either he paid a whole lot of people off, or he never did the shit again. I'm hoping for the latter. That he's like, I fucked up really badly, and I will never do it again. And God's way of kicking his ass and remembering never to do that fucking shit again was not giving him not one, not two, not three, but four daughters to constantly remind his ass. Do you want that shit to happen to your girls? Don't fuck up, motherfucker. That.
I kind of hate the idea of daughters being thought of as some sort of divine retribution, though, to be quite honest.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
I do.
What I'm saying, you know what I'm saying is just, not to say that that's the divine, you know, not divine retribution, but not that that's going to, not that, that it would have kept him from doing anything other, you know, but it's like, make sure that you realize, because it's like, a lot of times people don't think about stuff until, a lot of times people don't put stuff into perspective until they're surrounded by other, until they're surrounded by people that it could be hurt, that could be hurt as well. It takes, it's like what you know, what somebody used to say, I'm going to learn you. That part.
People, well, Jack in Shreveport says, Snoop, regarding Snoop, thanks, I was wondering about this too. See, if one person asks the question in this community, you can guarantee other people are thinking about it. And on Kobe, I caught D.L. Hughley on his radio show echoing Tracy and you, and that Kobe turned around and made something of his life helping people, including his daughters. His screw-up may have been what propelled him to the good he did later.
That's my take on it. I feel, again, that everything that he has done since, because until somebody tells you what you did to me was fucked up and I did not like what you did to me. And then the person takes, okay, I could tell you all day long, I don't like what you did or said to me. And then somebody said, I don't care. But when that person not only says they take responsibility for the fuck up and the mistake and how they made you feel, then they take, you know, that's a whole different thing. He took, at least in his way, he took responsibility. And for Dale King, again, meh. I feel the same way you do, darling. Meh. I think, like I said, the only reason Gail King is who she is because she's Oprah's best friend. And she's a basic bitch. I foot in the door. I'm happy for her because she's black and we need more black faces. But when I see black, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, filling upward. Lucky for her. She's mediocre at best. Ooh, and on that note, it's almost time for you to go anyway.
Well, it is, and I guess in 10 minutes, all the polls will be closed in New Hampshire, and then we'll all sit around with bated breath waiting to find out, is it Bernie? Is it Pete? Did James Carville succeed in making Senator Michael Bennett the comeback kid in New Hampshire?
I keep getting emails from him. So what the fuck? Who are you? Go away. But anyway, I love you guys.
We love you too, and it's neat. I mentioned Bert Williams, and there's a getting a lot of responses on it.
That's officially answered the
yes,
for,
you did.
Know, for
yes,
the,
you absolutely
for the black,
did.
The entire black community, especially black women.
You have
Snoop Dogg, because his music is misogynistic, and I've never liked his music, especially, you know, because, well, let me, when his music came out, I was a new mom, and I didn't have time to listen to his music, and then so, then recently, I don't know why, but I was listening to his music back from the 90s, and I'm like, this is some misogynistic, violent bullshit. So, I mean, I know he's another motherfucker. I mean, he has reinvented himself, and he's funny as fuck. You know, the Snoop, you know, his new commercials, his show, you know, that Dunkin' Donut commercial is fucking hilarious. And his, apparently his show with Martha Stewart is amazing. It's funny as fuck as well. But when you, you know, don't come after people, when black women. Because I hate it when black men come after black women. He did have a right to say, he did, you know, I don't blame him from going after, for saying something about Gayle King. Happen ever, there's a way to say shit. Because what he said was a threat. He did, you know, it was a violent threat against Gayle King. And words have meaning.
If we're going to sit here and say that Donald Trump engages in stochastic terrorism, which he does, then we kind of got to be consistent with regard to other folks as well.
That's exactly what he did. And he was wrong for that shit, because he probably has more followers than, and his followers have probably as many guns as well, no, maybe not. So
yeah, but let me provide a little bit of comparison and contrast here. You mentioned the magic word guns. Let's go out to and consider a case of white people white pippling.
You love that white people thing, don't you?
Well, you can't get much closer than this. We have to go to Pier, South Dakota for this. All right? You know, the darkest folks in South Dakota are Native Americans and, you know, two black dudes. So here's a great idea being promulgated by a Republican in their legislature who has offered up Senate Bill 120. Imagine if this was being, imagine this being offered in California, Illinois, New York, South Carolina. Well, it probably will be introduced in South Carolina, especially if they're successful in South Dakota. A maggot out there, or a pig licking, a Sioux Falls Republican by the name of Senator Jim Stalzer, wants to let kids younger than 18 carry pistols and weapons, pistols, handguns, as long as they've got a note from their mama. Okay, a consent note from their parents. And Senator Stalzer says federal law already allows it. But state law in South Dakota says that a minor with a handgun has to be accompanied by a parent or guardian or meet some other condition like, you know, farming or ranching or hunting or trapping or target shooting or in gun safety instruction. Well, that's not enough for the maggots in South Dakota. They want kids younger than 18 just to be able to strap on a Freedom Protector and go down, I guess, to the Wiggling Pig to get a loaf of bread and a jug of milk. Son, can you go down to the Wiggling Pig and get us a loaf of bread and a jug of milk? And don't forget to pack heat, son. Wow. Again, try to imagine that happening in any state. And I mention this in conjunction with the recording that's out and going like wildfire of Michael Bloomberg talking about
the inherent racism that he approved of stop and frisk. Imagine this being proposed in a state with a substantial African-American population. People would be having, good rock, solid rock ribbed, would be having a fit. And here's the funny thing. The Senate Judiciary Committee in South Dakota unanimously passed that bill out of committee. It'll go to the full Senate as early as tomorrow afternoon. Now, there'll still be a law on the books that prohibits people younger than 18 having handguns, but as long as the person younger than 18 with the handgun can show a note from mommy and daddy, it'll all be cool. Shorty in L.A., a sister's view, I love Calvin, a.k.a. Snoop. Oh, boy, I should have definitely confessed when he made his so-called apology after he watched the whole video. Same old thing happens when a brother doesn't have all the information, they act stupid. When both of these so-called celebrities fail to realize is that we are in a cancel culture. They've changed the morning program and put some younger people in there because they're going to cancel Gail out. And now that Snoop Dogg said that crazy-ass thing, the white world gets to cancel two people. Snoop did like white folks do. He did some shit, brother, the brothers only say at home. If he said that back home, U.S. women would say, shut the fuck up or get the fuck out of my house. Don't you ever come back here. All being said with a knife or weapon in hand. He's now going to have to invest in a whole bunch of things because cancel culture is now at his door and fake king. Lady B says, I appreciate Tracy's black movie comparisons. I've not seen Dolomite Is My Name yet, but I do plan on watching it. I just need to connect my Netflix. It's worth the effort. But also to further the discussion, the range of black talent. 20 years ago, Eddie Murphy would not have been given the opportunity to create such an incredible self-produced and co-directed movie because, well, you know. But ever since I saw him in 48 Hours, I knew that brother had incredible range. His self-deprecation, his self-awareness is extraordinary. That dark era he had with the sexism and misogyny, dude, a lot of over 50-year-old black males suffered from it. But he's been humble and contrite in his interviews ever since. I honestly believe that, like Dave Chappelle, Eddie needed to take a break and step back from all the madness. Now he's come back and he's stronger than ever. We tend to measure intelligence and capabilities based on the Western culture. That's okay. After all, it's the only one we know. But for those of you who may well be educated on the plays of Shakespeare or the writings of the Greek poets, but don't know the works of Zora Neale Hurston or Pigmeat Markle, ask yourself this question. You might know history, but do you know black history? Love you, Tracy. May your dreadlocks stay fresh and all your meals continue to be organically delicious. Lady B. Beautiful. Beautifully said. And that's part of why I brought up Burt Williams. Because, you know, when in 1910 Booker T. Washington said he's done more for black people than I have, he said he got into black people's hearts and made them laugh, and I had to struggle all along the way. And then there's the whole business about the feud between W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington and yada, yada, yada. And I'm not being dismissive. God, it was ugly. But for him to say something like that, yeah. And the guy who found and discovered W.C. Fields, who was one of my comedic heroes, saying that that W.C. Fields was the second funniest man he ever discovered, and the funniest was Burt Williams. How is that not a movie that needs to be made? Ziegfeld Follies? Yeah. Subject line, Gun Kids. James in Illinois says, what you gonna do when some MF-er gets mouthy? Well, that's what the gun's for. Freedom. Jesus. So, that's the program for this evening. Thank you to everybody who's jumped in and helped. Thank you to Don, and thank you to Ralphs for the challenges. Thank you to Roberto for answering. Thank you. Thank you most kindly to Irwin for jumping in. Thanks to Gary and Gaia out in Oregon. Gary, I'm sorry you got the flu, man. Gary was listening live tonight because it was the first time in a long time because Gary's got the flu. Get well. Chicken broth with a lot of black pepper and garlic in it. And if you've got a dear friend who makes kick-ass tom yum, ask that person to make it for you Thai style with lots of chili pepper. Apparently this flu bug cannot live in the presence of intense chili heat. So thank you all. And thank all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program however you so choose. Thanks to all of our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal. We have two new Patreon subscribers, and they need to be thanked. Thank you very kindly to, again, John in North Dakota, and thank you to Mark and Kathleen. Thank you, Mark and Kathleen, for jumping in and becoming Patreon subscribers. It is much appreciated, especially having lost a subscriber earlier this week. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.